Welcome to CEO to Rainmaker, a practical small business educational podcast designed to increase an owner's executive skills, raise profits, and achieve long-term sustainability. And now your host, Gene Valdez.
Episode number 59, How to Get Your Piece of the Government Pie with Abraham Shong. As I stated in previous episodes, federal entities are the largest purchasers of goods and services in America. As a small business owner, it behooves you to check out these programs to see if you qualify. It would be un-American if you didn't. I am super, super excited about my guest today, Abe Shong, who is both an entrepreneur and a national federal government executive. Abe has an inspirational and fascinating story to tell. Abe is an expert in government contracting, and he is here to share some important info about his association. But before I bring Abe on, please allow me to briefly outline his bio. What a story. After the Vietnam War, Abe and his family were living in Laos, but due to war infighting, he and his family became refugees and fled to Thailand for safety. A church in Ohio sponsored his family to emigrate to the United States in 1976. At the age of 20, Abe, with that entrepreneurial bug, started a retail comic book and baseball card shop. And then at age 24, he sold everything to become a missionary in Thailand. He returned to the States eventually and entered the corporate workforce. And as he says and states, he didn't really enjoy it. He started an office furniture business, sold it for a profit, and then became a real estate investor. Along the way, Abe discovered government contracting opportunities. Ultimately, he entered the government market, becoming an industry expert. Eventually, he became the president of the National Government Contractors Association, which is based in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's a position that he still holds today. During his tenure, he has trained over 12,000 companies and helped them secure nearly $1 billion in contracts. Abe was awarded by President Obama a Lifetime Achievement Award, and also awarded a Global Humanitarian Award. Abe earned a BA degree in leadership from Shorter University, which is located in Atlanta, Georgia. So let's bring Abe out. Hi, Abe. How are you? And thanks for being a guest on my show.
Hey, Gene. Hey, I'm so excited to be here with you. And I love talking about small businesses, entrepreneurship, especially the government market. So thank you for having me as a guest.
It's really my pleasure, Abe. So before we get into the meat and potatoes, I have two questions to ask you. I want to just make sure that I don't forget.
Sure.
Why did you become a missionary at age 24? And then I'll give you the second question.
A long life, right? Life is not necessarily about you. It's really about other people. And when I was young, I wanted to change the world. And I thought, how do I want to change the world? So I thought, I want to change the world by helping people understand where they are from a humanitarian perspective, from a spiritual perspective. So I decided to sell everything I had, the comic book business we had, close everything down, went to Thailand with the goals of going back to Laos to be a missionary for the rest of my life.
Okay.
But I did missionary work in Thailand. They wouldn't let me back into Laos. So that's why I decided to come back to the U.S.
Okay. All right. So you have a really interesting entrepreneurial journey. Based on that journey, how do you think that made you a better a better federal executive today?
You know, I meet a lot of people, and some of them are maybe procurement contracting officers. They've been in the government space for 30, 40 years. They retire and they want to teach businesses how to do government work. I'm not from the federal or from the government world. I'm from the commercial world. So I take all of my understanding about entrepreneurship and businesses, and I've started a marketing company. I've sold two businesses. And I take all the knowledge. And when I got to the government market and really understood the government market, I help businesses because I can relate to businesses. I can understand the pain point. I understand the challenges that they have. Every day they wake up, businesses have to go kill, hunt, and bring back meat for their business, for their organization. Contracting officer who retired, they're trying to teach businesses. They don't understand that. They understand rules, regulation, but they don't understand the pain point that small businesses go through. So in my experience as a business owner previously, helping business get to the government market, it was easy because I speak the same language that as entrepreneurs do.
Which I have to admit, not just because you're my guest, Dave, a lot of, bless their heart, government employees just don't get the entrepreneurial psyche. They really don't. And so it's really cool that you have been on both sides of the fence. So you have empathy for the people that you're trying to help.
Exactly.
So the National Government Contractors Association, what do you do? What does your organization do? And why should my listeners give a hoot? What's in it for them?
You know, the association was started because we wanted to help small businesses to understand this, you know, this amazing world. And they should care about it because the government is the largest customer in the world. Between the federal market and the state, local, county, cities, they spend about $2 trillion every single year. They award contracts. At the federal level, about $600 billion. At the state, county, and city, $1.5 trillion. So all collectively, $2 trillion. This is the largest customer in the world, bigger than Walmart, bigger than Amazon, bigger than Facebook. And so naturally, businesses, if any entrepreneurs who's a business owner, they should at least consider the federal market because it's the largest customer in the world. And then there's some unique special program that government want businesses to have. And so that's kind of why it matters to them because the government buying the product and the services.
I see. Is there such a thing as a hot government market right now? Particular companies in a certain industry, or is it across the board?
The government, from time to time, there may be industries that may be more, have more opportunity. And it depends on who's in charge of, you know, whether it's a Democrat in office, whether it's a Republican in office.
Oh, different, so now you're throwing politics into it.
Yes, different politics, a different game, right? Let me give you an example, Gene. So under historically, right, this is not true consistently, but historically, this is true. When a Republican is in office, DOD spending goes up. And so if you are a business owner, you want to say, okay, what do I sell to the DOD? Whether it's munitions or whether it's janitorial services to all the military bases, it doesn't matter. But DOD spending goes up. And so as a business enter into the government market, you got to say, okay, let me focus on DOD agency. Now, if it's a Democrat administration that's running the country, they cut back DOD spending and they increase civilian agencies. And so if you're in the business of doing government work, how do I do work with HHS? How do I do work with the Department of Education? How do I do work with the Department of Energy? How do I do work with all these civilian agencies? And so understanding politics, you know, and what they do. So to me, and you, we don't care. We don't bleed necessarily from our perspective. We don't bleed blue or red, right? It's not about blue states, red states.
No,
it's about green, right? It's about the green.
Yeah.
And so we just focus on how do we make money depending on which administration's in office.
Got it. Makes sense. Okay. So I noticed in some of your bio comments that government agencies need small business owners. What do you mean by that? I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, small businesses are extremely underrepresented in the government market. And, just to kind of talk a little bit about facts, I know some people like facts. of the $600 billion that the federal government awards to businesses, 80% of that money is won by large companies. Small businesses get about 20% of the contracting dollar. And even though based upon the SBA size standard, the SBA determined who's a large company, who's a small business. And based upon that, let me give a quick example. A construction company, $35 million or less, is considered small business. A consulting company that's about $17.5 million or less is considered small business. So different industry, different size standard. But overall, based upon that definition of what the SBA defined as small, 99.7% of all the business in the U.S. is considered small based upon their size standard. But only 20% of contracting dollars are going to 99.7% of all the business in the U.S. And so there's a disparity. And so Congress understands that. Congress understands that the heart of America is entrepreneurship. What fuels anything that we do here are small businesses. So Congress, through different programs, created different initiatives to empower the small business community. And one way to do that, they created some programs. One of the programs is called set-asides, meaning that when a contracting officer is considering who to award a contract to, they must set aside percentages, 23% of contracting dollars to small businesses. And then within set aside, they created different certification for small businesses.
Okay. So there isn't a simple answer to why there is a disparity, but why do you think there is? Let's say maybe the two top reasons why there's a disparity, because it sounds like the government has to mandate to set aside. In other words, we're telling the contracting entities, you must do business with this particular group of people. Why is that? Why do you think that's happening?
Yeah, because one is small businesses don't have the same resources as they established.
Okay, so one is resources. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, and resources could be they don't have a proposal writer. You know, because most small businesses don't have a proposal writer. Isn't that
correct? Yes.
Yeah, they don't. They say one of the first hire I'm going to bring is bring a proposal. They don't do that. And so they don't have resources. That's an example. And then the other part is the government buys in cycles. It's called fiscal year. And it's a procurement process. And so those rules and regulations in small business don't know. There's so much opportunities, but business don't know how to navigate the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulation. They don't know how to navigate that. So I call it the contracting maze. And they get lost in the
Yes. Okay. So resources, contracting maze, those are two big ones. I get it. And that causes a disparity. So what are small business certifications? Because I hear that term a lot. And why do owners need them, Abe?
So business do not need certification to win a contract. But what certification will do is certification open doors for them. So what is a certification? So Congress said, we want to establish different programs to help different segments of the small business community. So within the small business community, they break it up and they said 41% of all the businesses in the U.S. are owned by women-owned entrepreneurs. So they created a WOSB program, or the Women-Owned Small Business Certification Program, where if a business is owned by 51% or more by women, then they can qualify as a certified women-owned small business that allows them to win up to set aside of 5% of contracting dollars. Now, 5% of $600 billion is a lot of money. That's $30 billion.
Yes.
In the country where I'm from, Laos, the whole GDP of Laos is only about $17 billion. So we award more contract to women-owned businesses than a whole GDP of a whole nation. There's a lot of opportunities. And then there's other certifications like veteran-owned businesses. For veteran-owned businesses, the VA and the DOD, they prefer to award contracts to veteran-owned businesses. And that can go to civilian agency as well. And then there's minority businesses that historically has a social and economic disadvantage in the free market enterprise system. So through the SBA and through Congress, they created the 8A, 8 as in the number 8 and A as in apple. And it's a special program for socially, economically disadvantaged businesses. And they define that if you are African-American, Hispanic-American, Asian American, or from certain countries, there has been a pattern of social disadvantage in America. And so most people think it's a minority program, but it's a social economic disadvantage program. Minorities qualify under the social disadvantage part. So these are great programs. They open up doors for businesses. And the way I see it is this, it with a certification, instead of standing in the back of the line, it puts you in front of the line so that now you have a better chance of engaging procurement officers.
At least you get a shot. Get a shot. So generically, just under the category of certifications, is there such a thing, Abe, as the average time it takes to be certified? And if you said, I want to be certified, how does somebody do it?
Generally, there is no cost for most certifications. So if you go directly to them, there's no cost. But the time depends on different certifications. So for example, the best certification is the 8A certification. That's the strongest certification. Now, different agencies, the SBA will say they're all equal. Now, from real life practice, there are different certifications that have different strengths. So the 8A certification is the hardest one to get. And it normally takes about 6 to 12 months to obtain it from the SBA.
Now, you get it directly from the SBA.
Yes, you apply through the SBA portal. And then they will send you notification of the certification that you received that. So that's through the SBA. And other certifications too, different certifications take different time, but for most of the certification anticipate, so there's two main phases to the certification process. There's the preparation part where the business owner have to take time. They have to gather the tax returns. They have to gather their financial statements for their business. They have to get their stock certificates in place. They have to make sure that all of their business is in order. So that's the first phase of it. And that could take them 2-3 weeks or 2-3 months to get all that together. Once the package is complete and you have your business license, your financial, your tax return, then you submit it to the agency to review. And that period can take, they say it could take anywhere from 90 days, but because they're so backlogged, I've seen it where it takes 12 months. And so those two phases. So you know, the time frame depends on which certification and who's reviewing it and how fast you can get your paperwork ready.
Okay. So let me shift gears on you. So you're an education and training company for those companies that maybe want to land a contract. I know that you've worked with 12,000 companies that you've helped train. Could you share a couple of success stories that just really hit you by the heart that say, you know what? I'm so happy I got involved with that one. If you can reveal the name, great. If you keep it confidential, that's fine. Just a few success stories.
Sure. I'll tell you one of my favorite entrepreneur ever I've worked with. She retired from the school system. So she was a teacher, became a principal. She retired, but she always wanted to be an entrepreneur. So she said, hey, can you teach me, help me to get some gummy contracts? And so I said, do you have a business? She said, no, I don't have a business. I said, well, first we got, you know, she was 69 years old when we met.
69?
It was never too late to become a gummy contractor.
She should be in Hawaii. Instead, she's working on a business plan.
Yes. You know, you got to pursue your dreams, right? Her dream is not to sit in a martini on the beach. That's not her dream.
Well, you know what? Just as an aside, if I got this right, I heard that Colonel Sanders started his chicken business in his late 70s out of his station wagon. So I guess it just really depends on age. So go ahead.
Yeah. Never too late. So first we had to form a business. So I guided her through that. Her company is called Amyra, A-M-Y-R-A. So if you want to check out her website, AmyraLLC.com.
She's still in business.
Yeah, she's still in business. So
that's wonderful. Go ahead.
So we started her business. Then I said, okay, what do you want to sell? He said, well, I want to sell something I know. So she decided to sell tutoring services because she's an educator, so she knows tutoring services.
Tooling, she wanted to sell what?
Tutor.
Oh, tutoring services. Okay, yes. Got it. Okay.
So we decided makes to sell sense. Tutoring services. Mm-hmm. And then we said, okay, so now that we have tutoring services in place, so who are we going to sell to? So now we got to find out how government agencies are buying tutoring services. And so what we discover is that the federal government sends extra money to all the public schools out there. And some of these are extra money designed to help tutor special needs children. And any students that may be falling down or are at risk, the government has special money for the school system to bring in tutors outside of regular teachers. And so her first contract was a $25,000 contract with a school system for her to send people to go and tutor the students outside the teacher. Gee, this is kind of funny because she's never been an entrepreneur. So she won the contract and she said, hey, I'm going to go and start tutoring. And I said, her name is Barbara. I said, hold up, Barbara. Are you a tutor or are you a business owner? And I said, I thought you left education behind. And I thought you want to be an entrepreneur. She said, yeah, I want to be an entrepreneur. So I said, why are you going back to tutor then? I said, as a business owner, now you hire people to go do the tutoring. She said,
right.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, she wanted to be the worker bee, right? And she's the manager, not the worker bee.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So that's one of the first, that's one of the success story. And I love her because, there's no reason she should be successful as a government contractor, but she did that. And then another success story, I met a gentleman, and this gentleman, he's a CPA, right? As a CPA, how do you take this professional skill that's mainly, he's done all types of different accounting services in the commercial sector. How do we translate that into the government market? Do the government buy accounting services? Well, of course they do. But we have to repackage his services based on the needs that the government has. We can't. And so it's really the skill set that he has and not necessarily the way he's currently selling his skill set, because he has people that can do audits. He has people that can look through numbers. You have people that can make sure that things are in compliance. That's the skill set. So we apply to the government. Okay, how does the government buy these type of services? Well, one of the things that we discovered that the government buy auditing services through HUD. So HUD as an agency, they have all these different Fannie Mae houses that when they borrow defaults on HUD contracts or on Fannie Mae contracts, it goes back to HUD. So HUD has to liquidate all these properties and they need a company to come in there and an asset management company to come in there to liquidate all these properties. Hiring an attorney to foreclose on the property, hire a property manager to go in, protect the property, cut the grass. All of these things need to happen. Well, because this is money, all of it has to go through a financial auditing process. And so we were able to find them a teaming partner that have asset management as a service. And so they need a CPA firm to do all the financial services, all the accounting behind the scene. And so we were able to team them up together, set them up in a mentor-protege relationship. And the large company is going to actually flip one of their contracts, a $6 million contract, to the CPA firm.
Wow.
So that was an amazing success story, right?
Was that a man or a woman?
It's a gentleman, yes.
Okay, was he had a little skip in his step? Boy, I sure glad I met that Abe guy.
Absolutely, he's excited. So,
well, it sounds to me in caveman language that I'm a small business owner. This is what I do. I come to your organization, and you say, "Okay, this is what you do. I'll show you how to navigate, and I'll help you find a buyer." You're like a sales and marketing consultant.
Yeah, we teach them how to navigate this space there. And
it's not like you're a walking business plan to the CPA guy and the teacher.
Exactly.
I mean, so what's the best advice you could give my listeners who are small business owners? And when I say small, they're inconsistent with the definition of the SBA. They're all, my target market is companies 100,000 to about 15 million is my preferred podcast listeners. What's the best advice you could give them in terms of at least seeking out the possibilities of government marketing?
Sure. On average, it takes most businesses about 3 years to break into the government market. And so most small businesses don't have 3 years. And what we try to do is we try to shrink that time to about 6 to 9 months so that they can take 3 years of knowledge and learn it in a very short period of time. And every time I work with a business owner, I always give them this advice. It's not a matter of if you will win a contract, it's a matter of when you win a contract. If you don't quit, you will be successful because the government needs small businesses. So yes. That's the best advice I can give to anybody. Don't quit along this way here. You will be successful. And I've seen lots of companies along the way, they stop and they don't succeed. But those that continue to navigate and push through and overcome, they are successful. They're winning government contracts.
All right, Abe. So I've got one final question for you because I know you're busy. I really appreciate the time that you carved out of your schedule. COVID impact, is it now negligible? Is it still in the air? Is it affecting the demand for services? Is it affecting the legislative body agreeing to certain budgets? What's going on here on COVID?
Sure. So COVID is a good example of how a business has to adapt, right? So business die if they don't adapt. So we can kind of look at some of the big brands in history, right? Circuit City. This millennials and this generation, they don't know what Circuit City is. But back in the day, Circuit City is everywhere. They failed to make a shift online sale. Toys R Us, right? Huge nationwide footprint. But Toys R Us is bankrupt because they failed to understand the shift. And so as a business going to the government market, first you have to understand there is a shift. And when the market shifts, whether it's coronavirus or anything else, you have to adapt your business to the market condition, to the environment that you're in. So how coronavirus is impacting businesses this year? One is contracting officers don't go into the office anymore. So when you're trying to meet a contracting officer or a program director or a manager that runs a department, and you're trying to understand what the pain points are so that you can offer your product and your services, you're trying to meet with them. They don't want to meet with you because of the virus, coronavirus. And so how you engage them, you have to understand, okay, they do Zoom meetings. So how do I market to them so that I can get a Zoom meeting with them? If you're trying to get a face-to-face meeting, they're not going to give you time and a place for them to meet with you. So that's like one example of how you have to adapt, how you engage them, how you market, and what you ask for. If you're asking for an in-person meeting, not going to happen. So you have to adjust. Now, as it relates to opportunities, coronavirus, billions and billions of dollars was put out tied to coronavirus. I have companies that were selling TVs and audio systems. And when coronavirus happened, they said, we need to sell PPEs. So they started selling PPE because of the environment, because of coronavirus. So instead of selling TVs, they shifted to PPE and they grew 700% in 1 year.
Got it. Well, Abe, this has just been fascinating stuff. And your journey, my hats are off to you. What you've done in your life, and I know you're going to continue to do more, is exemplary. So what is the best way for my listeners to get a hold of your organization? And then just in case they forget, I'll put all your contact information on the show notes.
Yeah, the best way to reach out to us is through our website, and it's govassociation.org, govassociation, govassociation.org. So that's the best way, or you can reach out to me by email, abe@govassociation.org. So that's another way. And then our main phone number to the office is 404-955-8080. So that's another way you can reach out to us.
That is great. So thank you so much, Abe. And that concludes today's show. That's a wrap, listeners. If you enjoyed the show, as always, please give me a like, give me a good review, and subscribe. And I look forward to talking to you next Monday morning, like always. That's it. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This has been CEO to Rainmaker with Gene Valdez. To find out more, like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you have questions, email the show. Find that link and others in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time.